eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome to Eat, Drink, Talk,
the finest restaurant spirits podcast ever created for the city of Louisville's restaurants and bars. I'm your host, Steve Coombs. And in the studio with me today is my co-host, Rick Redding. Happy Thanksgiving, Rick.
Gobble, gobble. It's great to be doing this great podcast on a week devoted to eating, right?
Absolutely. Big eating. Elvis eating.
That's what it's all about.
Even Thanksgiving Eve now has become like its own holiday, kind of like Christmas Eve.
Oh, wait till you hear what I have later in the show about the popularity of Thanksgiving Eve.
Oh, it's especially big with kids coming home from college.
It's big
for
the kids.
Fun night to go out.
Okay, I'll go ahead and tell you. We'll talk about it later in the show, but Gerstle's, who my guest is the owner of Gerstle's, says it is the biggest night of the year for that bar.
And, doesn't surprise me.
And probably a lot of the ones around there.
Doesn't surprise me. My favorite used to be Butchertown Pub for Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah. I guess it's just the fact that you don't have to get up the next morning and do anything, and then you get to sit around and eat all day.
Well, and all your buddies are coming home from out-of-town college.
Yeah.
Come and mingle with the poor friends who didn't get to go away to go to college.
I can remember vaguely those days. I was one of the ones coming home.
Not I.
All right. Well, what about this great this podcast, our 29th episode? It's really great. We have sponsors.
And it wouldn't be possible without sponsors like Harvest, which is located at 624 East Market, Farm to Table Cuisine, all done by Chef Patrick Roney and his massive crew. You know, for those guys, you're eating the produce that they hauled in all year long that's been preserved, dried, pickled. That's really cool. Some of that stuff is accenting the ingredients that you'll get on your plates. It's open Tuesday through Saturday from 5 to 10 p.m. and for brunch Friday through Sunday 10 a.m. to 2:30. Call 502-384-9090 for reservations.
Very cool. And while you're coming home, a lot of people come home, take care of business, like getting their eyes checked. And you can do that at the Eye Care Institute, or another of our fine sponsors. They're at 502-589-1500, right down there on Story Avenue. Give them a call. The friendly staff will schedule your appointment. And if you have more serious eye issues, like want to look into LASIK, that's the place to call.
And don't be driving on Thanksgiving highways if you have real eye problems.
There you go.
But the Eye Care Institute can fix it, no doubt.
No doubt. No doubt. So big week of news. You know, we're airing now on Tuesday. So toward the end of last week, we had we had one really big story, right?
So Lynn's Paradise Cafe, that restaurant finally officially sold to Martin's Barbecue. It's a done deal. It had been rumored about for many, many months until the one in Indian Springs, the old golf club, opened up.
Yeah, there was a story on Eat, Drink, Talk about that.
That's right. And amazingly, the sale price was $1.5 million when we had a couple of people who had bid for that site said they would bid as much as $4 million for it, and Lynn turned them down because she wanted $8
million. Greed is not always good. Right?
That's right, and hubris does not always leave you happy. So she, long story short, keeping that place closed as long as it was, I think we calculated, you know, you add that in with the shortfall of what she wanted for, or what she got for the restaurants, it cost her about $4 million.
Wow, which is amazing. But I think we have to say Lynn's Paradise Cafe did its part in putting Louisville on the map.
Absolutely iconic restaurant,
and
no question about it.
Did a lot for sales of bad lamps.
Or abandonment of bad lamps. I think people brought them in to, here, Lynn, you take this. It fits your kitsch, but not my decor.
Yeah, that was fun. They had all kinds of crazy parties and, you know, what I would say were overpriced breakfast specials, but it was fun. It was a great place to go.
The saddest thing to me is, though, it didn't go to a local operator. When local operators had bid for that place, and, you know, I've got nothing against Martin's, but I just had wished that it would have gone to somebody local.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a lot different not being Lynn's there. So, you know, we'll move on.
Speaking of challenges for restaurateurs, so December 1, the new overtime rules that affect every business, not just the restaurant business, are going to take effect. And for those of you who don't know it, but the threshold of eligibility for overtime pay has for 13 years, I believe, been $455 a week. Now it immediately almost doubles to $913.
So if you're making somewhere between that and counting on overtime to get up there, you're not going to be able to get that overtime anymore, right?
Well, if the operator says I've got to, or the business owner says I got to keep that person on salary, they immediately get a huge raise up to $913 a week, or they change their status to hourly and risk running into a huge amount of overtime, which in the restaurant business that's really troublesome, because you have sous chefs, for instance, who are on salary working 60 hours a week, and they're not going to get bumped up to, $47,000 a year, which is the minimum. And wow. So what are these operators going to do? They kind of curse themselves with that business model and saying, hey, you just work these murderous hours, we'll pay you this. But it's too much too quickly, I think, that you jump from 455 to 913. Couldn't they have eased that up? Maybe $50 a year, $100 a year? I don't know. But how almost doubling it?
I question. I don't know the history of it. I wonder how this got passed in Congress. It's sort of a liberal bill, and maybe that'll be one of the things the new regime will try to pull back on.
Gosh, there's so many things going on, and that's probably one of the reasons why it got through. I mean, maybe there's just too much going on in Washington. I don't know. I know that. Dean Corbett, one of our regulars on the show here, said that is more scary, that this overtime rule change is more scary regarding his bottom line than the slow pace of business in restaurants right now. He said that they just can't, they, meaning every restaurateur that he's talked to, cannot absorb this financial blow.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a challenge for independent restaurants for sure, and but we don't have reports of closings this week. We have a very exciting opening, though, to talk about.
What kind of sort of an opening? Lola, the new lounge at Butchertown Grocery, opens this week. In fact, on Thanksgiving Eve, which you said was a big night. The lounge, of course, had been open from the start when it was open a year ago. But as Bobby Benjamin said in the story that we wrote, it is them finishing what they started. And they have new lighting, thankfully. It's always really dark up there. And I believe some new furniture, some new bands, and a new menu just for Lolo. It just sounds like an incredible bunch of good sandwiches. Yeah. So you don't have to spend nearly as much as you do downstairs to eat there. So it's just cool. It's just amazing what they're doing down there. I was there Friday night, and it was busy. Busy.
I'm convinced to try it on Thanksgiving Eve. It really sounds great. That place also has, I know you are very familiar with, a little bit of a controversial history.
It used to be Meat. Meat was up top there, and the bottom was the Blind Pig. And they tried to share liquor licenses, and the ABC said no dice. And then a cat fight broke out.
And they both ended up leaving.
All three ended up leaving. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it was a tough day. Oh, it was awful. It was a bloodletting. For what was a pretty decent restaurant, and what I understand, a cutting edge cocktail bar. I never made it down there to Meet, which turned into Meta.
Yeah,
just there you a little go. Transposition of a couple of letters, and now we have the greatest cocktail bar in the city, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great place with old Jeremy over there. That's great. Now we've got a what's called a speakeasy opening in the city,
Mr. Lee's. In Germantown, I don't know squat about it. Insider Louisville reported that it's going to be opening up this week, 935 Goss Avenue. And you and I were talking before the show started about what makes a speakeasy. And right. All we know of is the secret password and, secret location and secret door. And
you got to have a secret handshake. That's what we used to have in the fraternity.
Yeah, and I guess the booze would have to be illegal too, right?
That would be.
I don't know what qualifies.
You have to have lockers. The only one I know of course, we talked about the Bonnycastle Club in the Highlands, and we both went there as guests of people. And, it's interesting to see a locker room inside a bar. I remember that.
I don't remember that part. That's been 30 years probably since I was there. But still, yeah, at least that's a club. It's out loud and proud about what it is. There's nothing hidden about it, but speakeasy is kind of like the overused farm-to-table term sometimes applied to restaurants or bistro, but they have a speakeasy. So at any rate, I think it'll be cool. It sounds great. That strip in Bardstown has just become fantastic. Goss Avenue.
Yeah. How many more places can they cram onto that block, or that little area there?
I don't know.
It's great.
Lots more.
Great apparently. Place to walk around. Okay.
So we need to talk about our first guest this week, don't we?
Why don't we do that? Because you've got an exciting one.
So Scott Darnell is the executive chef at Scene, as in S-C-E-N-E. Not the past tense of saw. That's the new fast casual limited menu restaurant that's going to be opening up in the Kentucky Center for the Performing Arts. Is that how they call it now?
That is what it's called, and it's an interesting spot because a lot of operators have tried to make a go of it in there, and more recently I know they've only opened like for cocktails during or before shows. So this is I'm guessing this is a full-time deal.
It is, but it's fast casual. And he, I don't believe he mentioned that in the interview, that so you're going to the counter and ordering and getting your grub, and the menu is very tight and simple, and they really believe they can pull it off. And why don't we let Scott Darnell talk about how he thinks it's going to work.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Shariat,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
Sitting here at the Kentucky Center for the Arts with the new executive chef of Scene, the restaurant that's going to be set up in the space that once was occupied by Jarvie's in Bristol, and now they're going to take another stab at it. Scott, welcome to the job and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here. Glad to talk to you.
Did you ever try to come down here when those places were here and see the
You know, when I was
chaos?
Younger, I remember coming to the Bristol down here, and I've been to a handful of shows since there was no restaurant here, and the bar was kind of tucked off to the right, and I really didn't. I think I got a drink at one of the bars in the lobby and didn't even bother going into to where they were serving a little bit of food at the time.
Well, talk about maybe why those restaurants struggled there and how it's going to be different with Scene.
Yeah, you know, I think, as we talked before, the margins in any restaurant are so razor thin
mm-hmm.
that if you get some downtime or the crowds you weren't expecting, that can absolutely break you. And what we're doing here is literally enhancing the patron experience. So as long as the center does well, we can live with the restaurant not doing well for a week or maybe a slow month in January, knowing that we will pick back up.
Because the bills are paid by the center.
The bills are paid. They own the space, and right. It's either gonna sit empty and do nothing, or we're gonna feed some people that come here. So my option is feed the people and make them happy.
Speaking of feeding people, give us a brief history of some of the restaurants where you've cooked in town.
Okay, long ago started at Le Relais. Came on as
Monsieur Anthony Dyke.
Anthony Dyke, yeah. That is right. Yeah, and Franck Châtelain was the chef when I came
sure.
there.
Wow.
Do you remember Franck?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that brings back
showing
memories.
Our age.
Yeah, that's true. But when Franck left, I was too young at the time. I was only 23, 24, but I had worked at a fine dining French restaurant in Lexington, and I had actually gotten to apprentice in France a little bit and cook. So
oh, nice.
I was back then, as you know, there was only like four or five fine dining restaurants in the city. I think it was
right.
Le Relais, Vincenzo's, Lily's, Shariot's,
Jack Fry's,
Shariot's, yeah. And so even though I was young, I had a pretty good resume on me, and I pulled it off somehow for 4 or 5 years at Le Relais as chef. We did very well. Then Kathy Carey, who was just beginning to source local product, came on the scene, and she was looking for somebody as sous chef, and I came on with her, and it was so exciting to see, because back then nobody sourced local, and she
right.
had these farmers, Bruce and Carol, that would come to her back door with fresh produce, and it was just, it's giving me chills talking about it. Amazing to work with that stuff. Stayed with her through a good chunk of the 90s when she was in her heyday. Got to go to the James Beard House twice with her and cook. I mean,
wow,
huge
nice.
Honor and such a learning experience, and you know, I value everything I learned from all these restaurateurs.
And your last stop was?
Last stop was, I was away at Cheddarbox for a long time,
mm-hmm.
And then I came back when she opened La Pêche up and worked with her again. Worked at night a little bit at Lily's, and that fueled the fire. I met somebody who was opening a restaurant called Somewhere, came on board with them, and we did really good stuff there for about a year, and this opportunity came up. And I'm not one to jump ship and stay places a long time, but when this came along, I knew this was going to be a very good setting, a good scene, and I couldn't pass that up.
Couldn't sidestep it.
Yeah.
So tell me what we're going to see here in terms of, let's talk about the food first, because people can see the facility when they get here.
Sure.
Talk about the menu. I know we talked a great deal about sourcing Kentucky products.
Correct.
And also the fact that it's a streamlined menu to get people in and out quickly so
Absolutely.
They can see the show.
That was
a difficult balance.
Oh, that was priority one when we came on board, was people have to come. They're creatures of habit. They come, they want a drink, a bite to eat, and they want to be in their seats 15 minutes before the show. And I can't blame them. That's what I want, too, when I come to a show. So we've definitely got a streamlined menu. We tried to get it for everybody, people that come once a year to see the Nutcracker, and then the regulars that come all the time.
Is it going to be reservations only, I would think?
No, completely welcome.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. But again, these items are designed to be moved out super fast. The longest thing is going to be the burger, especially if somebody wants well done. So we'll work with our staff to say, if they want a well-done burger at 7 o'clock, the show starts at 7:30. We're obviously going to tell them, you need to make sure you've got time.
Sure.
I would say 15 minutes tops, even for a well-done burger, when we've got 60 people in front of them.
And you're saying earlier that maybe 120 people would be as many as you could seat.
Yes.
There will not be, for now, food during intermission.
Correct.
Or after the show.
Correct.
But if you see the business opportunity, you guys might jump on that.
Absolutely. That is the plan, eventually to be open possibly for dinner even when there's not a show. And again, I talked to you earlier about seeing the lunch crowd out here on the street. There's a huge, huge lunch crowd. Any place I've gone around here at lunch is very busy. And the staff that works here, I've got 100 to 170 people that are hungry at lunch also. So we look to open for lunch and dinner. Again, wait on.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about staffing because one of the problems is that business is uneven here.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys are looking to be able to hire a lot of part-time people who may perhaps work days and then come down here and work at night. I mean, that's going to be great for extra work for restaurant people.
Absolutely. That's almost entirely the way they do the bar staff right now. They operate the Brown Theater, also, I was telling you, and they have right now a base pool of probably roughly 30 bartenders, and I would say well over 90-95% of them have day jobs, and they start by calling a few. If somebody says, no, I've got plans, they call the next one, and they piece together their staff that way. So if somebody doesn't work out, they've got 10 more people in line that are willing. And I won't have that many, but I will have 3 to 4 to 5 people that I can use that have other main jobs that if I, have a slow period, I won't need them. They're okay with that. But if I'm busy, I can, between all of them, I can find enough to staff it.
Well, on this menu, talk about some of your favorite dishes you're going to roll out.
All right.
And when, by the way, again, is the opening night to the public?
Opening night will be the 29th, and that is the first night of Book of Mormon also. So we're coming on with a bang. And
oh, man,
December,
big show.
Yeah, December is going to be between the Nutcracker, Book of Mormon, all the other stuff. December is probably one of our busiest times of the year. So
excellent.
We're coming on full speed. We're going to put off some projects that can wait till January. Work on them then.
So what are the Book of Mormon fans going to eat?
Yeah, they say with what they drink, they can really, as you go through this, you can really nail the crowd down. A lot of crowds are the craft beer drinkers, and then you get, the Louisville Orchestra people that want a glass of wine and maybe a Manhattan or something a little more classic. And they say it'll be that way with the food too. So we're like I said, we're sourcing everything local as possible. Maybe I'm thinking about it because I just tasted it or we talked about it, but Black Hawk Farms beef out of Princeton, Kentucky just absolutely blew me away. The flavor, you almost don't need to season.
So are we going
to
see that outside of the hamburger? Is there a
not yet right now.
No?
We're stuck with just a hamburger. The hardest thing on this menu was the limiting. Like I literally laid out 6 slots for entrees, 2 salads, 2 soups, and of course I had a mountain of entrees that I absolutely wanted on this menu, but when you only have 6 slots, so much stuff didn't make the cut. So we really had to limit. We had a skirt steak or a flat iron steak or some of the deckle tips Black Hawk's doing right now.
Right.
Amazing.
Right.
And you will see that stuff in the future or like we talked about on catering, But for now, we just had to.
So give me, show me some fast dishes which are going to really turn. Yeah, well.
Again, the burger I said is probably the most time consuming. The butternut squash and black bean tostada.
Nice.
It's amazing, and it's one of those dishes that you eat. It's vegetarian, but you don't even think about it.
And there's a pimento cheese grilled pimento cheese sandwich.
It's actually warm pimento cheese dip with grilled French bread. The French bread's local. G's Lane Bakery does a wonderful job. We got nice little cast iron crocks. They're a little overdone, but they're still cool. It keeps it nice and hot. Run that through. The flatbread is just going to change with what we want to do.
Right.
You know, margarita, maybe roasted pear, walnut, saga. We'll do lots of fun stuff with that. But literally in the Ovention oven I was talking about.
Right.
We can have a flatbread out in less than 2 minutes.
And so there's a couple of pasta dishes. Yeah, a couple of pasta dishes. Soups, salads.
Again, you know, homemade pasta, locally sourced. We're not going to make it ourselves yet, but eventually down the line, we absolutely will. Same with the buns. We'll make those. We're sourcing the pretzel buns locally also.
And check average. What are you thinking people will spend here?
You know, I think it's going to be all over the board because you can come in and get the crab cakes for $18. You might get a salad with it for $8. And, you know, creme brulee for dessert at, like, you know, $6. So you might come out, you might get a couple of drinks and spend $35, $40. But if you don't want, you come in, get a cup of soup for $5, salad for $7. You're completely full. You're satisfied. It's local, good food. And you're out the door for, like, $13, $15.
And you guys are going to do that in less than an hour.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
The guy I've worked with before, and ticket times were huge. Even on a busy night, we would rarely go over 15 minutes, and this is going to be even more streamlined, so I do feel confident about that. The soft openings will tell me for sure.
Well, there you have it. The culinary scene at the new restaurant scene down at the Kentucky Center for the Arts. Scott Darnell, thanks for being on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Thank you, Steve.
Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
All right, Steve. Well, that was a great interview you had. I'm anxious to see if they'll be able to pull in what kind of crowd from downtown they'll be able to pull in.
Well, they're going to operate it, you know, like he had said, just like it's going to start just with shows and probably go that way for quite a while. They also see a lot of catering opportunities, too.
Okay.
So they're not going to try to do the business model that everyone else has in the past because, hey, the center owns its own property, so they get to do what they want with it.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. That's what you should do. All right. Well, this is our favorite segment of the show when we talk about going out for the week and things that we do, eat and drink. And what our favorites are. And we're going to go with you, Steve. Your food favorite?
Oh, Butchertown Grocery. I'd said on Facebook this is one of the hardest parts of the job is that you don't get to go back to places that you enjoy so much. And it's been a year since I was there and got to go Friday night. And Chef Bobby Benjamin just put on the dog, as they say, and just had – we had a table of three. Unfortunately, my wife had to work late and missed out. And he just kept sending out single plates and the – threesome just divided them up and it was great. And so my favorite was the potato gnocchi and sauteed in brown butter with mushrooms, herbs, and parmesan. It was just awesome. I mean, that the texture of that dish is really the thrill. But the one maybe that would be better recognized was a grilled lamb chop with pickled candy striped beets. And there was one left over that I got to bring home to my wife and she just says, "This is the most outstanding lamb I've ever had." And I don't think that was just her hunger speaking, having worked a 13-hour day. It was that good.
Wow. Well, that
Chef
sounds,
Bobby
that sounds nice.
Yeah.
Man, I'm definitely got to get down there. I didn't have a big week of going out. And, you know, I live on the East End, Steve. So, you know, we don't have the great independent restaurant choices out there. And my son is a picky eater. So I took a look out to Mellow Mushroom, and he used to be a cheese pizza guy, as a lot of kids are. But now I said, you order whatever you want. And he got the all meat, which was sort of an interesting thing.
Luke?
That's big now. You know, I don't know. I let him do that. And I don't think it'd be my favorite. You know, the bacon on top of the sausage and pepperoni and all that.
It's gilding the lily.
Yeah, it's a little it's a little much for me. But that didn't stop me from eating it.
Well, I can fill in your drink favorite for my own self. Why don't I just take two? How's that?
Why don't you?
So Nick Christensen is the bar manager at Butchertown Grocery, and she's just an under-heralded but super talented bartender. And I had a scofflaw cocktail. It was a rye cocktail, and unfortunately, I don't remember all the particular ingredients. I was hoping that I could cheat and get him online today, but I didn't. But mostly I want to mention Nick's talent. I got to judge a cocktail contest with their Thursday night and listen to a pro, you know, giving me tips on what I ought to be looking for. So go down. She's kind of the queen of Lola, as it were, because that's her spot. So go down and visit her this week. But also, I bought a it was a private barrel pick. And this is, people, this is really what you should be getting. Instead of trying to get pappy and waiting in line for all these supposedly limited release whiskeys, go to the stores, local liquor stores, and get their barrel picks. These are one-off whiskeys that you'll never see again. And they're without fail fantastic. And I got one from the Paducah Bourbon Society that was their Knob Creek pick. Knob Creek typically is 9 years old. This was a 15-year-old Knob Creek that absolutely blew my mind. It was it was amazing, and you can't approach it without a little bit of water. It's powerful. So just hats off to the people at Beam for making some incredible whiskey and having something laying around for 15 years. I can't imagine what was even in the barrel at that point.
So what was the price tag on that bottle?
$50 freaking. That was it. $50 for this bottle. And I don't think it was my friends at the Paducah Bourbon Society cut me a break. They just said, send it. And then they sent me a, was funny. They sent it with a bunch of, a couple of boxes of Milk Duds in the box to throw off the noise, the glug glug, the whiskey moving around. You're not supposed to send stuff like that. So I won't say who in the Paducah Bourbon Society sent me this. But that's
so there's
what
a secret mail system to get around the law.
There is, because they didn't, you know, the government wouldn't get his little measure of tax from me. They got it four different tiers already, but they wanted mine. So I beat you out, Uncle Sam, on that
one. There you go. That'll show them.
So tell us about the Gerstle's chef.
Well, you know, it's really cool. We're not really talking about the chef. We're talking to the owner, Eric White, who he's a 41-year-old guy, bought the thing 8 years ago, and it has an interesting background in terms of growing up in the area, and but more importantly, the bar. I don't know the last time you've been in Gerstle's, Steve.
Many, many years, but I spent many, many dollars there on $4.15 pitchers of beer.
Yeah, I think that's still their shtick, you know, down there on weekend nights, you know, Molly's and Tin Roof. and Diamonds, there's just people walking around all over the place. But Gerstle's is the only one that was there when, you remember the other bars, Myers and Dutch's.
Mayors
and Dutch's all used to be there. Well, they're all new bars now except for...
Let's see, Dutch's is now Mellow Mushroom, and Mayor's is Tin Roof,
right?
But Gerstle's has held on since, what does it say, 1943 something on the sign?
In 1924. They're coming up on 100 years, and Eric told me that, you wonder how long a guy can run a place like that when he's got kids and doing all the family. He says, you know, in 24, that might be the end of his run. It would be 100 years. Since Gerstle started out, a guy named John Gerstle converted his house into a bar.
Wow, right there next to the railroad tracks. He was living low, wasn't he?
He was doing it. So that was a lot of fun. And they're doing this great charity. You'll hear about it in the interview. But it's called Eat, Drink, Donate. You know, I wonder where they got the inspiration for that name.
I can't imagine. They should have had us come out and do something fun, a co-venture, as it were.
Well, Eat, Drink, Talk. Happy to promote Eat, Drink, Donate with our friends from Ballantine Whiskey. And they are having they're actually having leftovers. You don't hear much about the food there. It's basically bar food. And then they're going to talk with the chef. But it's bar food. But they're going to roast some turkeys. And whatever turkey's left over, they're going to serve in sandwiches on Friday, Black Friday.
Nice.
So that's the deal. If you're tired of your own leftovers, you can go out and get leftovers from
somebody else's leftovers.
Yeah, there you go. So that's what's the interview. I had a lot of fun going down there and talking about old times at Gerstle's. So listen in and enjoy the show.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called
40-ish.
It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. Comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
Today, Eat, Drink, Talk is celebrating Thanksgiving. I'm at Gerstle's, and I haven't been drinking. Eric White, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, man. Great to be here.
So you're the owner. You took over this place a while back, but it's got a really long history.
Yeah, it does. I've been here. I bought this place back in January of 2008, so going on 9 years. Gerstle's has been around literally almost 100 years. Since 1924.
Wow.
And when I took it over, we just tried to give it a fresh new look, rebuilt the bar, and most notably, the new patio bar that we have.
Okay, and it all looks nice here and everything, but, you know, it's on this very prominent corner in St. Matthews. I don't know if there's any stories, you know, about the history of this place. Going back to the 20s, a lot has changed. You know, any good stories you can tell about the past?
Any good stories about the past? Well, it used to be a lot. We get a lot of questions. I don't know about good stories, but we get a lot of questions about what the no coils means on the neon sign out front. I've heard different things. I heard that used to mean no girls allowed. But they just put no coils. But actually, I think it has something to do with the draft beer system. But as far as any fun stories or anything like that, nothing off the top of my head.
It was always a bar or a restaurant?
It's always been a bar. John Gerstle's, this used to be his house. He turned it into a bar in 1924. And it passed along down through his family for a couple of decades. John Gerstle hasn't owned this bar probably since the 40s or maybe even 50s.
Okay.
I think I'm one of four owners since then. It closed down briefly, I believe, in the 90s for about 3 or 4 years, and it was called The Avenue. Somebody came in and turned it into a nice upscale restaurant called The Avenue. It didn't last long, so a group of people came back in, turned it back into Gerstle's, and then that's where I came in.
Yeah. And now it's the big hot spot for all those young people we were just talking about, right?
Absolutely. Sure.
Friday and Saturday night, it's packed on this corner. So, but anyway, I want to ask you about this event coming up for Thanksgiving. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about what a great party weekend Thanksgiving is, but it is.
Yeah, it is. Thanksgiving is probably the busiest week of the year for us and a lot of bars around town and definitely including the St. Matthews area. Thanksgiving Eve is the big night. That's where everybody comes back home from college or out of town and they all go out and have a good time. The whole weekend as a whole is a great time. With this event that we have on Black Friday, it's just an event to really try to raise money for Wayside Christian Mission. And, you know, we're taking donations of canned goods and hats, gloves, socks, coats, whatever we can do to help, you know, the Christian mission. And in the meantime, have some good food and maybe a couple beers.
And it all starts at noon, I know. So I'm used to this place being hopping at night. So it's good at noon and it's about food. And so I'm going to ask Ronnie Dingman, who's here with me, runs the kitchen here. Tell me about, you know, what are you serving for leftovers?
Well, they are going to be true leftovers. We're going to be roasting turkeys early in the week, obviously, for Thanksgiving. And we're going to literally take what's left over and make some really incredible sandwiches. We're making a cranberry aioli, so it's going to be a real icebox kind of sandwich. You grab some bread, you grab some turkey, you grab some stuff, you spread it on there. That's going to come with sweet potato fries. We're also going to do some deep-fried macaroni and cheese balls. You know, we're just taking pretty much anything you might have in your refrigerator after Thanksgiving, finding some fun things to do with it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be looking for pumpkin pie.
Well, if Eric will let me do that, we'll see what we can make happen.
All right. Well, I want to. A lot of people don't know that the Gerstle's has a kitchen, and you serve all the time. You took over the kitchen a few years back. What have you done to make it
enticing for people?
Well, two years ago when I came in, Eric already had a pretty strong philosophy about the kitchen. He was very committed to doing things fresh and trying to use house recipes and those sorts of things. And so I just kind of took that ball and moved it forward a little bit. We're very dedicated to making everything fresh. We patty all of our burgers by hand. We hand cut our chicken tenders and chicken breast sandwiches. Everything's made to order. You know, all of our sauces and things are made with house recipes. Okay. So we're committed to fresh, and we're committing to doing bar food, but doing it at a maybe a higher level, or, you know, not just being satisfied with buying something in from a purveyor and deep frying it and serving it to you.
Okay. So Eric, you've gotten people to come in, I guess people come in and have dinner. How late does the kitchen stay open?
Midnight every night, Ronnie?
No, we're open until 1. The kitchen's open until 1 o'clock every night. We expand our hours a little bit for the summer when people are out doing stuff a little later. But, yeah, 1 a.m.
Yeah, it's really, there's still so many people that don't realize that we even serve food. You'd be amazed about the number of people. And you've been in here, I'm sure, one or two times, Rick. And you can definitely attest that there's quite a few bodies in here. And they, I'd say a majority of them don't even know we have a kitchen. So we're just trying to bring awareness that not only does Gerstle's not only is Gerstle's a good place to come and watch a band or get a beer, but it's also a great place to get a burger or a sandwich or some wings or whatever.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining with the band playing and all those people in here crowding around this table and trying to eat a hamburger.
We do very well for happy hour. We're a great after work spot. You jump off, you grab a sandwich, you grab some, cheese balls or whatever. So it's a good, we do great on happy hour.
Okay, Eric, I just want to ask you about running a place like this, because it's a lot of bands, it's young people, it's staying open until 4 o'clock in the morning. Does that take a toll on you?
Sure, absolutely, but it's fun, and every job has its pros and cons, and this one definitely does. The more I've gotten to know some of the bands around town, and the more they know me, it's a great partnership that we have with a lot of these bands. But in the beginning, the late hours, we're open to 4 a.m. every night. So, getting home at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning was rough, especially when I started having kids a few years back. Once that started, the wife was like, I don't think this is going to work. So luckily, I'm not here till, the wee hours of the morning quite as often as I used to. But, yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me like, I don't have any statistics or anything, but just what it seems to me, driving by all the time, it seems like this whole area in St. Matthews has really got a resurgence going. That, I mean, I guess it's not just late at night, but there's a lot of people walking around down here.
There is, and that we've definitely benefited from the popularity of St. Matthews the past several years. When I took over Gerstle's, it was Dutch's and Mayor's and Gerstle's, and I believe BW3's was here, and Diamond's.
I remember when BW3's was at
Molly's. Yeah, and of course we had Saints right down the road as well. Now, you think, 8-9 years later, we've got Mellow Mushroom, Drake's, Tin Roof, Molly Malone, Saints and Diamond's are still here. We've got us, Gerstle's, kind of anchoring the whole area, and we're the last man standing as far as these old original bars. Dutch is gone, Mayor's is gone. I know that was a local favorite of a lot of my dad, for sure. Mm-hmm. So we're still here, and again, we're, I think, the oldest bar in Louisville, if I'm correct, and we're still here, trying to keep
it. There had to be when you took over, I guess that you didn't consider, you said that your predecessors came in, changed the name up, changed it a lot. You didn't even change the name, right?
I considered for a long time about changing the name, because some comments that we got when we came in here was, well, you've kind of got a head start. You're buying a bar that everybody knows. When I took over, yes, most people who live in Louisville know Gerstle's, but the reputation associated with Gerstle's was not a good one. Mm-hmm. They thought, dark, dirty, hole-in-the-wall bar, didn't have food, or if the food that they had wasn't good. So we had to come in here and change that whole perception of what people thought Gerstle's was. And, we're still a neighborhood nostalgic bar with a lot of upgrades, one of which is the kitchen.
Yeah, and the bar I'm looking at is full. I guess you had to upgrade that as well.
Yeah, we completely rebuilt the bar. The actual bar top, the back bar, new draft beer system. One thing that we've really tried to focus on with the boom of bourbon and craft beers is have a good selection of those. You know, we've got close to 40 bourbons, 20 draft beers, so we really try to give a good selection.
Okay. So all these kids, when they're in here elbow to elbow, they're buying the good stuff.
No, it's still Bud Light, Coors Light, and, you know, the Wells, but that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah, that's what they have to do. Okay, so on Black Friday, we're going to come in here and have some great leftovers. Ronnie, tell me why, tempt me, I've scrubbed. It looks like the Ballantine is a big part of it, right?
Well, we've been lucky enough to partner with them, absolutely. You know, I would love to get in there and do some cooking with some of that whiskey and get some ideas churning. You know, we've got a beer cheese right now that we really enjoy that's going really well for us. So we'll be featuring that as well this weekend, along with, like I said, all of the leftover specials that we discussed earlier.
Okay. Yeah, and the Ballantine Whiskey, I can't say enough about them. Jeff Stumm, who's one of the owners, is partnered with us with this event. And can't say enough about their help, and they're definitely a big sponsor of this event. Ballantine Whiskey, they have a few different flavored chocolate whiskeys. They've got an original chocolate, a bourbon ball, caramel turtle, and chocolate mint. And typically we serve it cold, chilled, and you can also make some great cocktails with that as well. It's a great product, just came on the market not too long ago.
Okay, I'm familiar with all those flavors, so it's all great. So just so I know, for Thanksgiving weekend then, Wednesday night's a big night?
Wednesday night's the big night, absolutely. But all weekend's a big night. Or a big, big week.
Okay. Well, it's great to get back in here at Gerstle's after, you know, I'm a little old for you, but I stumble in here every once in a while.
We'd love to have you anytime.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.